Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Gretchen, stop trying to make flap happen. It's never going to happen. This is Flap Culture. Welcome back to Flop Culture, a podcast where we mainly talk about flops, but we also talk about bops, pop culture, celebrities, everything in between. My name is Fionnuala J. I'm happy to have you here. Hope you enjoyed last week's episode with the wonderful Peter McGann on Bond. Some Bond casting news. We had producer Michael G. Wilson speaking with Deadline at a celebration for Bond's 60th anniversary this week. And he has said the casting for the role has not yet begun. Who is taking over Daniel Craig? He doesn't know, but he did say they're going to be in their 30s. They are going to be jaded. They are going to be struggling with the cost of living crisis. He didn't mention the last two things, but he did say, we've tried looking at younger people in the past, but trying to visualize it doesn't work. Remember, Bond's already a veteran. He's had some experience. He's a person who's been through the wars, so to speak. He's probably been in the SAS or something. He isn't some kid out of high school that you can bring in and start off. That's why it works for a 30-something. Some people have taken that as like a jab because some publications were reporting that Tom Holland was in the mix, which I scoff at because he looks about 14. And I don't think you can have a Bond that looks like he would be ID'd if he was going into coppers, to be honest. Could be wrong. That 30-something definition, though, I think means that like Tom Hardy and Idris Elba are also ruled out. But who knows? We'll have to wait and see. Without further ado, let's get into the news, shall we? Kim Kardashian and the case of the cursed cryptocurrencies. All with K's. What a terrible novel by J.K. Rowling. Kim Kardashian has paid US regulators more than $1 million, that's a little over 1 million euros this side of the pond, to settle charges for failing to disclose that she was paid to promote a crypto asset in a post on her Instagram page. The reality TV star, social media influencer and entrepreneur, who is estimated to be worth $1.8 billion, has agreed to pay the Securities and Exchange Commission, the SEC, $1.26 million to settle the charges. She was paid a paltry, you'll agree, $250,000 to post about crypto security tokens sold by Ethereum Max on her Instagram account in June last year. Kardashian, this makes me laugh. Kardashian asked her then 220 million Instagram followers, are you guys into crypto? Like a person at an afters, you know what I mean? It's 4 a.m, everyone's going like this. There's this horrible techno music in the background. You just want to put on ABBA. Kim Kardashian comes up to you, the biggest eyes you've ever seen. Are you guys into crypto? I don't know why she's from South Dublin all of a sudden, but anyway. The post did feature the hashtag ad, but the issue was with cryptocurrency, you have to declare more explicitly that you've been paid to promote it, but you also need to say how much you've been paid. And obviously, Kimmy wasn't going to be like, hey, guess what, peasants? Guess how much money I got to promote this currency that I can't explain to you? Loads. More than you probably make in a year. It included a link to the Ethereum Max website, gave how to buy the tokens, blah, blah, blah. Violation of federal security laws. Gary Gensler, he's the chair of the SSE, said this case is a reminder that when celebrities or influencers endorse investment opportunities, including crypto asset securities, it doesn't mean that those investment products are right for all investors. Kim has agreed not to promote crypto assets for 3 years. She's cooperating with the investigation. However, she has not admitted or denied, like, isn't kind of getting involved with their regulators, that's a hard word to say, with their findings. She's not the first celeb that this has happened to. In 2018, we had Floyd Mayweather and DJ Khaled get similar fines for similar behaviour around promoting cryptocurrencies. My question is, why does she still do it? Why does she still do Spawn if she's as rich and as successful as an entrepreneur as she is? The conspiracy theorist with a K in me also considers the fact that, you know, the timing of this is like very convenient, inconvenient. It's inconvenient in a way because obviously she just had the news of her private equity thing that she's doing. But she's also just launched that first episode of her Spotify podcast. So it's all the press is happening. You'd be conscious of the press cycle. But I just, and look, I feel absolutely deranged when I talk about this, and especially with these kind of numbers, because $250,000 is money that I will never, ever have in my lifetime, and neither is $1.2 million, right? But considering how, and when I say the word little, I mean relative, obviously relative for her, how little she was paid compared to the fine, it boggles my mind why they still do it, why they still do Spawn and those weird loop giveaways where it's like, you need to be following, let the Lord be with you. You'll get all these Louis Vuitton bags. Louis Vuitton has nothing to do with it. Louis Vuitton has never heard of us. Is it just that the money is so easy? Is it just that it's a case of, I can put this up and generally face no consequences? It's the easiest money. She probably has like a drive of just old photos that can be doctored to include whatever product she wants. Bizarre. But then is it also just a case of, is her success actually not as successful as we've been led to believe? Like, I don't doubt that, you know, Skims, you on the outside, you would think is very successful, but that family are not, they've been known to fib about businesses, like Kylie Jenner exaggerating the worth of Kylie Cosmetics. That comes to mind here as well. Anyway, that's the end of that. I never, ever, ever, ever want to mention the word cryptocurrency on this podcast again. Ever. Don't let me do it. Significantly less tongue-in-cheek story now. Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie have been locked in very intense legal battles since filing for divorce in 2016. And it's taken another turn since. But I suppose for background on this, just get people up to speed. Earlier this year, Brad Pitt had filed a lawsuit against Angelina Jolie over the ownership of the French winery the two had bought together in the 2000s called Chateau Miraval. Earlier this year, I think it was, Jolie sold the company to a company that's indirectly owned by a French oligarch. And people saw that as like, because this is what I've heard, Brad was really into the wine. It was more kind of his thing. And this was really seen as like a fuck you from Angelina because hit him where it hurts. He was way more interested in this. She'd actually previously tried to sell her shares and he'd stopped her. But this week in a countersuit, Jolie alleges Pitt had choked and struck their children. Variety had the countersuit and they state that Pitt choked one of the children and struck another in the face in 2016. These allegations were previously reported as part of an anonymous lawsuit filed by Jolie that accused Pitt of assaulting her and their children on a private plane shortly before she ended up filing for divorce. In addition, Jolie told the FBI that Pitt physically and verbally assaulted her. However, the FBI did not pursue criminal charges, causing Jolie to anonymously file a Freedom of Information Act suit against the FBI to obtain documents related to the federal investigation against Pitt. So the thing with the new suit is that, like, most people knew this, or like it had been I had heard about this on other podcasts about him being abusive and this taking place on a plane, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But basically the thing with the new suit is that it goes into greater detail than previous reports, stating that Pitt grabbed Julie by the head and shook her, then grabbed her shoulders and shook her again before pushing her into the bathroom wall. Pitt then punched the ceiling of the plane numerous times, prompting Jolie to leave the bathroom. The filing continues, when one of the children verbally defended Jolie, Pitt lunged at his own child and Jolie grabbed him from behind to stop him. To get Jolie off his back, Pitt threw himself backwards into the airplane seats, injuring Jolie's back and elbow. The children rushed in and all bravely tried to protect each other. Before it was over, Pitt choked one of the children and struck another in the face. Some of the children pleaded with Pitt to stop. They were all frightened. Many were crying. And as I said, after this incident, Jolie ended up filing for divorce. And I mentioned it was last October, so October 2021, she had attempted to sell her stake in the winery. He halted negotiations, forced Jolie to sign an NDA that would have contractually prohibited her from speaking outside of court about Pitt's physical and emotional abuse of her and their children. Not good. Not good, especially when you consider the tact that Pitt has been taking with his career and really kind of having a second wind for him. You'd wonder, was the skincare thing... I'd heard other people talking about this, like the ludicrous skincare line that he has that's so, so, so much money and he cannot even break down what his skincare routine is. People thought that might have been a way for him to filter money into there and tie it up into that so it doesn't get lost in all these lawsuits. But I suppose the sad thing is you see posts about it on Instagram and... I should say he's absolutely denied these claims. He hasn't denied all of them, but he said, I'm paraphrasing, but he's basically said that every time this story comes out, there's new details added. And he's admitted to wrongdoing in some areas, but not everything. But it is really sad to look at, you know, the Instagram posts or whatever talking about this story and seeing again, like, you know, people are already like making... comparing Angelina Jolie to Amber Heard, which is another discussion for another podcast, certainly not this, but it kind of gives me full body clench. This is only the tip of the iceberg of this, though. I didn't even really want to talk about it because it's not that posy, but it just seemed like an inescapable story this week. To end on a slightly lighter note, not necessarily for them, but for us, I'm still laughing at this headline from People Magazine. Giselle Bundchen has hired... a divorce lawyer, Tom Brady, trying to figure out what to do. Sources. As if he's having, like, I just have this idea of him running around like a headless chicken, no idea what to do. I don't know if people care about Tom Brady and Giselle Bundchen across this side of the pond, because American football doesn't exist here. That's a joke. No one correct me. I know it does. Sport is valid, whatever. But... I just imagine wanting to shag a football so badly that you end up getting divorced. You know what I mean? Losing your wife to a football, whatever. Sources had previously told people that basically that there'd been this rift had been brewing between him and her. And it began in part when he went back to the NFL earlier this year. After a brief 40-day retirement, Tom, what are you doing? Just retire. Whatever about any other people getting cross. Do you dream of labour, Tom Brady? Do you dream of labour? We're trying to stop capitalism. Join us, won't you? If I could retire tomorrow, I would. 40 days. And he was like, oh, I miss it. I miss it so much. I miss it so much. I need to go back. Get a life. Honestly, get a life. Let's talk flops, shall we? My next guest joins me to talk about an American psychological thriller, which Rotten Tomatoes describes as distasteful and ludicrously plotted. This is truly an out-and-out flop, and I'm so thrilled to have writer and DJ Louise Bruton joining me to talk about it. Let's get into it. This is I Know Who Killed Me. Louise Bruton, it's a goddamn pleasure to have you on Flop Culture.
Oh, I feel like I've been waiting for this day all my life. Not just months, because I have, but all my life, Fionnuala.
What did you pick? Don't keep us in suspense.
Okay, so I've gone for one that people may know very well or may not know at all, because it's so out there. It's Lindsay Lohan's movie, I Know Who Killed Me, which... Oh.
Very, which Harry has extremely strong feelings on.
Yeah, Harry will have a lot of feelings here, and it's great that he's riled up now. But Lindsay Lohan's movie from 2007, I Know Who Killed Me.
Why did you pick it, and what was your first interaction with it? Like, did you watch it when it came out, or did you come to it a bit later?
So, because of the release time, so 2007 was the time when, like, streaming was so shit. It was such a shit time for streaming. Like, you would be holding your laptop that was connected to some sort of Ethernet cable. And I used to think that if my breathing became out of sync, that was the thing that was affecting the buffering. So streaming, not a great thing back then. So I had to wait until it was released on DVD and was available in Ireland. So I think I bought it around 2009 or 2010. During a phase when I was definitely addicted to buying DVDs from Tower Records. So much was I addicted to buying DVDs that I actually bought this film twice on DVD.
Twice?
Because I was so excited about it coming out. And then I bought it, and then it kind of popped into my head again, because Lindsay Lohan was so in the news around 2010, like, constantly. And I was really, maybe not at my peak pop culture time, but definitely at the... It was the real kind of the rebirth of it, I suppose. Like, 2010 was a big pop culture time, and Lindsay Lohan was like the face of that, I feel. So every time Lindsay Lohan was in the headlines, I was like, I must get I Know Who Killed Me. So I actually ordered it twice, and I have two copies of the DVD in my private collection.
There you go. So I would love to see more of that private collection, to be honest.
It's mostly from that time frame of my Tower Records DVD buying addiction. So there's a lot of 90s horror and thriller things. Lindsay Lohan features in three films, so, you know, that's
says it all.
Yeah.
What does I Know Who Killed Me about?
So it's about twins, which is not Lindsay Lohan's first foray into playing twins. It is one goody two shoes twin called Aubrey, and one baddie, actually one shoe. Because amputation features in this storyline. Baddie One Shoe, Dakota. Dakota is a stripper. Aubrey is a high school English major star, plays the piano. She gets all sorts of scholarships for being so, so talented. Whereas Dakota is probably her entrance into this movie. I'd say Jennifer Lopez has probably based her entrance on Hustlers a lot on this scene. It is Lindsay Lohan just kind of languishing around a strip club, and it's all filmed as if it's on through like an Instagram filter. Like, it's another thing, I'll get back into the plot in a second, but another big thing is around this time was when Give Me More, Britney Spears's song, was released.
Yes, of course.
Also set in a strip club, and which is also filmed like it was filmed through an Instagram filter. So there is a bit of a weird kind of crossover there. So stripping was big in pop culture because we had Britney doing it, we had Lindsay doing it, and also, again, Hustlers was set in 2007. So it's all... Anyway, it was a big time. Big time for strip culture. Anyway, so back to the plot of the film. So we see the goody two-shoes Aubrey and her life just living. Like, she goes out with a star quarterback player, Jared, and the way that the film is all shot, it's done just very, like, obviously. Everything is on the nose. So he rubs his hand up her thigh in their biology class, and she's like, no, Jared, I'm not going to have sex with you. And he's like, oh, like, it's so, like, I'd love to talk to the scriptwriter and be like, what happened? What happened to your dreams? So everything is going really well for Aubrey until, after a big American high school football team, whatever that is, sports. you know what I'm trying to say here.
Could be anything to me. Could be badminton, sure, whatever.
Yeah, it was the big badminton bonanza of her high school. and she goes missing. And everybody freaks out. Like, she goes missing and within 10 minutes, everybody is just, like, freaking out. And it does this weird sort of kind of Columbo-type non-mystery element where we see the crime play out in front of us. And we all kind of know what's happened. We know that Aubrey has been kidnapped by a masked mystery man. And we know that she is losing parts of her limbs. So she loses a hand and a leg and she's been tortured because there had been another girl who had suffered a similar fate from their high school, Jennifer Toland. And another strange thing about this movie is they give people very brief, intense moments on screen and then they're never addressed again. So Jennifer Toland, the girl that was initially killed, she never really comes back up again. She isn't mentioned ever again in the movie. Same with this mystery sexy gardener that lives in Aubrey's, that does up Aubrey's parents' garden. He has a really intense scene where he wanks off a stick basically to Lindsay Lohan's character, Aubrey, and just never appears again. Like,
you're just reminding me of this and it's replaying in my head and I'm like, they really just left that there and they were like, you interpret that. There's no other context. There's no other exposition here. This is it.
Like, I want the director's cut because he obviously had a much bigger role and it was just never, it was like to tap into what is like Aubrey's like bad side, but they just never kind of followed through on that because Aubrey is, for all we know, totally virginal, loves poetry, loves piano, loves her hairless cat. Like, that's kind of the height of it. And Aubrey, a very important point, because this is an art house horror film, Aubrey always wears blue. So she's given blue roses from her boyfriend, Jared. Her bedroom is blue. Every scene that she's in has a very blue, heavy colour scheme going on. Whereas when Dakota is in the scene, everything is red. Red is her colour. The rooms she in, they're normally like red velvet rooms because it's normally a strip club. Anyway, so good girl Aubrey, butchered and found at the side of the road, wakes up in a hospital, is like, what's happened to me? Nurses aren't very helpful towards her because they're like, we'll just get the doctor, and they just leave this like panicking girl who's basically just had half of her limbs amputated. And then they bring in her parents and they're like, oh, thank God you're okay, Aubrey. And she's like, I'm not Aubrey, I'm Dakota. What? And then the classic twin switcheroo happens and her parents are trying to convince her that she is actually Aubrey and she's just had a terrible traumatic experience. But then she tries to prove them that no, she was in fact Dakota, who was born on the wrong side of the tracks, doesn't have a social security number because she was raised to believe that you should never be traceable. Anyway, just like utter nonsense. All like these strange lines are just like kind of thrown out of nowhere by every single character in the film. Like one in particular was from one of the policemen investigating the whole murder scenario, and he just goes out of nowhere, I really hope this investigation doesn't clash with bingo night. And that's the only line in the scene. Like, that's it. And we kind of don't really see him again either. So, like, I think a lot of people must have gotten fired on set or something. It was just a very strange... Anyway, an important thing to mention about this movie is that it's really confusing. And there are basically two storylines and they happen in different timelines. So we've seen everything happen. We've seen Aubrey be kidnapped. We've seen her be tortured. But then when Dakota is brought on, we eventually get her story. So she's living now as a newly amputated lady. She has to get a robotic hand and a robotic leg. And we're very told cleverly by one of her kind of like OTs or physios that if ever she runs out of battery, it'll be like dragging a dead leg around. So that's another one of those strange kind of lines that stuck in the script somehow. So as she has somehow just been placed back into the Aubrey household, she does the bare minimal to try and prove that she isn't actually Aubrey. And I think there is probably a lot of things that she could have done to prove that she was Dakota, which was show them her house or bring people to the strip club where she stripped every night of her life. But instead, she just decides to have sex with Aubrey's boyfriend. And then she somehow develops this weird telekinesis with the twin. And she gets these like secret messages that appear that sound kind of like the rustling of leaves and the wind kind of going like Aubrey, like it's that kind of thing that's going on. And she is then dead set on finding Aubrey because she somehow knows that she's still alive. Now, another big mad thing to happen is the two parents are very present in this film, and it isn't until maybe three quarters of the way through that, absolutely massive spoiler alert here, that when the mother was in labour, the baby she was pregnant with died. So the father roamed the maternity wards, found what they describe as a crackhead, and, you know, it's unfortunate that that is the description that they use all the time, but they find a woman who gave birth to twins, and he was like, she had one to spare. So he took one of the twins, gave it to his wife, and they just left the hospital really easily with this other woman's child. So they were, in fact, twins, but they were raised on literally different sides of the train tracks. So that's what happened.
Are you still with us, listener? Are you still there?
Do you want to be with us? So then it just kind of turns into sort of like a very strange episode of like, Are You Afraid of the Dark? Where bad Lindsay Lohan can hear that good Lindsay Lohan is still alive. And she brings the dad who confessed all of us that he stole a baby off another woman in the maternity ward. And she has just like miraculously like figured out the mystery through some sort of like cosmic message sent through a mirror in her bedroom. Like, I know it sounds like I'm speaking in tangents, but this movie is entirely made in tangents. So like, I must...
No, it is. As I also watched this, I can confirm.
Yeah, and she just immediately knows to go to the to Aubrey's piano teacher's house, and lo and behold, there they find a room that is just full of prosthetic legs and prosthetic arms hanging from the ceiling. And then eventually she kind of gets pulled towards this grave, and it's not quite sure when Aubrey was buried there, but she was buried there in a stained glass blue coffin box, and for some inexplicable reason buried in a wedding dress. And Dakota is able to dig her up with her robotic amputated prosthetic leg and arm.
Yeah, yeah.
Because while the leg has run out of battery, the arm is supercharged, and she burrows like a little rabbit squirrel, and she somehow finds a still alive Aubrey, and the two of them are delighted that they find each other, and they curl up graveside, and that is the end of the film. And what are the lessons learned? I don't know.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Like, my knowledge of this movie, and we'll get into it when we talk more kind of about Lindsay and the context of her career and where she was, but what I knew of this movie was she was on the way out. And when I say that, I mean in terms of like celebrity, tabloid culture, we were really getting to kind of its peak, and her falling out of, you know, that public favour in a big way because she was going out and people didn't like that and everything else. And she just had a run of these kind of bad projects. So when I sat down and watched this, I didn't think I'd like it, right? But I fucking loved it. Spoilers. It was 50% what I was expecting and 50% not. Like, I wasn't expecting it to be as arthousey as it was. Like, it's very, you know, indie movie, every single cliche you can think of there. You're talking about the colour and the filters and blah, blah, blah. And then it has all the other things that I knew I was going to get, like that stuffed dialogue, these really weird moments, the absolutely insane plot. But I'm going to be honest, and I still loved it, don't get me wrong. It had me for the first like maybe 50%, maybe going up to 3/4, 75%. I was like, no, this is good. Like, it's a bit mad. It's not like great. It's obviously not meant to be prestige, but like, it is good. And then, because I really thought it was a tale of reincarnation as opposed to twins. And then when it started getting to be twins and like the dad's in on it and then the piano teacher and then they're she's hearing things, the madder it got, I was like, oh, I just, you're making it hard for me to defend this. But it is just, it's also just so, so good in other ways because it is that madness, because it leans into that madness.
Well, we've completely skipped over the main part. So when Aubrey has been kidnapped and has been tortured and is losing all of her limbs through because of the piano teacher, on the other side, Dakota had not been kidnapped, but she was experiencing something called stigmatic twins, where... So as Aubrey's fingers were being cut off, Dakota in her real life, her finger would just start to rot off. And she she was in the middle of a performance in the strip club when loads of like blood just starts pumping out of her hand. And she wraps it up, but she sees that her finger is like falling off and she just wraps it up in a big towel. And the madame of the strip club is like, oh, you better take another towel home. And she's just like losing all of her blood home on the bus. All the blood out of her body is pumping out of it. And then when she wakes up the next morning, her leg has just disappeared. So she's experiencing all of the injuries that Aubrey is suffering through. And I just don't think stigmatic twins is a real thing. And she so easily finds it because she goes on ask.com to find this out, because she's like, I'm gonna find out what's happening to me, because it's fucking weird.
Of course.
It's the weird
healthcare thing. No, doctors. She doesn't have absolutely not. Ask.com. Yeah.
So of course. Ask.com. She goes unexplained bleeding wounds. I think that's the search term. And
I had completely forgotten about. Like, there's so many, these little tangents, these little moments that just. It's deeply layered. I think that was the thing. I really thought this was going to be very one note. And in some ways, it kind of is. But there is so much to this. It's a blooming onion, like just constant, like it's unfurling. You think you've eaten one layer and it's a bit relentless.
It keeps you guessing. And I suppose that is the magic of cinema. Right?
I'm obsessed. Where was Lindsay at this point in her career, and what do you make of her performance in the movie?
Now, she gave it her all, I'm not going to lie. Like, she did some good acting. Now, I have always believed that, like, I know we're kind of in the bit of a Renaissance. Is that what we're, yeah?
Whatever. Yeah, the two words come together, yeah. Actually, Linsance makes way more sense. Why the fuck? Ignore me. Carry on.
I think we're due it. Like, I'm not really buying into all these kind of like Hallmark Christmas films and stuff that she's kind of got lined up. I believe we got maybe another 5 years and she's going to have her moment. So, but in 2007, it is really peak of her entering, kind of like getting all the DUIs, breaking up with Wilmer Valderrama, getting with Samantha Ronson, falling out with all of the pop gals like Hilary Duff. So a big kind of turning point in her career seems to have been in 2005 when she was filming Herbie Fully Loaded.
If someone please come on and talk to me about that movie as well, FYI, just DM me, we'll do it. Fucking love that movie. Love Talking Cars. Obsessed.
So Herbie would have come just after Mean Girls. And I think in her mind, maybe Mean Girls was the bookend to her playing teenagers. But then Herbie Fully Loaded happened. And I think that's actually when the Lindsay Lohan, Hilary Duff, Aaron Carter big fallout happened. And she probably just wanted to be a bigger kind of Hollywood star than she was, but she's very much stuck in the Disney canon. So then she kind of took this movie role to be shocking, but like her private life was quite shocking at this stage, because like loads of, like she was just like a staple feature of like Perez Hilton at this stage. And I think it was around when like loads of photos of her leaked, where she was like licking knives at a house party. And at the time...
Iconic. Something we all do.
At the time, that was like, oh my God, girls gone wild. And it's like, well, wait till you see Lindsay in 2011. but this was just her just basically going out on the raz a lot. And it was also kind of not that long after when Georgia Rule happened, which was where famously... she claims she was just like an hour late to set, but apparently she delayed like production loads. And Jane Fonda had written her a letter just to be kind of like, get your shit together, you're letting loads of people down. So I think she kind of leaned into the rebellion thing and thought that this was going to be her real moment of, I'm a serious artist, I can take risks. And this kind of like turning point doesn't know it was work out well for a lot of actors, because I know like say Katie Holmes would have done something similar after Dawson's Creek, where she did that film Go, which was all about like taking drugs at a rave and getting kind of messed up with lots of bad guys. And while that was a good film, it just didn't really kind of do much to kind of like turn her career right around. But I think that was what Lindsay was hoping to do, but it just kind of fell into the big joke pile of what her career actually kind of became shortly after that, because she didn't really have a career. She just had loads of scandals surrounding her. And I think that that's the... I mean, there's a bigger thing at play here, and that's like, children should never be famous. And she was only like maybe 20 at this stage. So yeah, there's much to dissect.
Jesus Christ, she was so young. There's like, I don't know why I have it in my... I'm like, she's older. Like, of course she is. She's not. It's just that I'm so used to seeing her, which I shouldn't, because... children should not be famous. It goes back to that point that you just said.
Yeah, like nobody should be famous, really, if we get down to the bones.
Actually, great point. But then I'd have nothing to talk about, and neither would you.
Yeah, exactly. So. I mean, like, we'd have absolutely nothing to do with ourselves. But, yeah, so she really became just a victim of her... of the celebrity of her, and it was, like, very, very sad as well, because, like, she also tried to have, like, the singing career as well. Which I'm a huge fan of, obviously. So she would have had her two albums, which was like Speak in 2004, 2005, and then A Little More Personal, brackets, Raw, close brackets, which was in 2005, which has the amazing song, Daughter to Father. Do that one? Confessions of a Broken
Heart. Yes.
Yeah, amazing.
So good.
So again, I thought that maybe she thought that that was the direction where she was going to go in, where she's going to be a bit of a Jennifer Lopez, where she surprises everybody with the fact that she is actually like a triple threat. Because lest we forget, Lindsay Lohan also had a leggings line at this stage, which was...
never forget.
I think it was called 6126. No, that doesn't make sense. It was something... yeah, 6126, which was... Marilyn Monroe's birth date, because she saw herself as a Marilyn Monroe figure. And
of course,
Megan Fox actually said, compare Lindsay Lohan to Marilyn Monroe, and I'm paraphrasing here, saying something like, Marilyn Monroe wasn't respected in her time and she was considered talentless, and look at her now. But it was seen as just like a huge diss to Lindsay, just to be talentless and kind of a laughing stock.
And of course, obviously, Marilyn Monroe famously loved leggings.
Love them. The girl could love them for a pair of leggings.
Why do you think this flopped then, and how responsible is Lindsay in your opinion?
Now, the director, Jesus Christ, like, he really blew his load on this one, just not really knowing if it was going to be like a film noir or like a teen horror. Like, it could have been a very good teen horror. It could have fallen kind of similar path as like Urban Legend or like Skulls. Do you know those kind of silly sorority type horror films? It could have been that, but this wanted to be a serious movie, and anything that was funny in it was very unintentionally funny. And no, Lindsay acted her chops off, and I will give her that, but the dialogue was pretty terrible. Like, there was one bit where she's just like, fingers, hands, legs, gone. I practically died. And it's like, yeah, you practically died. All your body was cut off. Like, like, you're, it's a miracle you're even talking. Yeah, the downfall was just bad choice. Whoever her agent was at the time needs to have been sacked. Whoever wrote the movie needs to have had serious stern words sent their way. And the director should have just taken that sepia lens off the camera and turned a few lights on.
I know. Lighting goes a long way. I'll let him know. It has kind of gotten this second life as a, you know, that kind of teen horror kind of, like, there's been critics come out in 2020 being like, yeah, obviously it's not a classic, but it's, in their opinion, it's really misunderstood, and it's often shown at, you know, like, horror screenings and stuff. And I couldn't agree more with you. I meant to say that it just falls, it falls so well in that category, but it's also trying to be that film noir, that indie film, that taking itself too seriously when it's very much, maybe just take this as face value. It's a bit of fun. It's mad. It's mental.
Yeah, and there was like a huge bit of scandal, I remember, around the fact that Lindsay Lohan was getting pole dancing lessons. And that was meant to be the big shocking feature, that she was playing a stripper. And there's not much stripping in it, you know? Like, it was just... where was the stripping? No, there was only like two stripping scenes in it. And there was just so much chatter about her getting all this training. And I don't know, I suppose we've come a long way. And we've been spoiled with good stripper films, because we've seen what Jennifer Lopez can do. But then how cruel is it comparing anybody to Jennifer Lopez? And, you know, she could have had that career. She could have been the singer, dancer, actor that Jennifer Lopez is. But I don't know. Just Lindsay, I think, just kind of became sort of like the Walmart version.
You sound like a spokesperson for big stripping. I'm not going to lie. But I'm here for it, to be honest.
It was so big in 2007. And it's continuously big. But 2007 was a big time for it. And
was this... No, this definitely came later, but it's just when I think of like stripping and like stripper poles and like the scandal in pop culture. What year was Miley at that awards show with the ice cream van and there was a pole on it for some reason?
Nickelodeon Awards. Oh my God, I'd be willing to bet that that was... I mean, am I allowed to Google? I'm Googling.
I think it was... I think it was the Teen Choice Awards, and I'm 90% sure it was Party in the USA.
It was...
I don't know why...
Party in the USA.
I remember it being like, oh my God, she... And then again, it's like, okay, wait a few years at the VMAs. Just wait. And even at that, that was nothing, but it's so funny, like, how revisionist it is.
But it is interesting that it was that point in, like, pop culture where these young women were actually really not doing offensive things whatsoever. But the way the conversation at the time went was... You're whores. you're really letting down everybody because you are wearing a pair of shorts. Like, that was the kind of conversation. And because they kept being kind of fed that, like, I believe with Lindsay that she kept being told this. So then she ended up kind of behaving even worse to kind of just prove how much damage she could actually do. And then that unfortunately kind of bit her on the ass, because, you know, in those circumstances you do lose control then. So she was kind of trying to be the bad girl, and then I suppose sometimes being the bad girl then gets you kind of in, you know, put into jail. So, and that's what happened to her a few times.
Other movies out that year, just for context and just because I think it's funny, we've No Country for Old Men, of course. Transformers. Okay, fair. Juno, Ratatouille, There Will Be Blood, a lot of parallels there. Atonement, one of the Harry Potters, Hot Fuzz. But I think, as we've discussed, it was more where Lindsay's star was going. And also, sorry, it's 50% Lindsay, 50% the fact that on paper, not really a great movie, let's be honest.
I mean, like, if I was Lindsay Lohan and I was offered another movie about playing twins, I'd be like, do you know what? One's enough.
I mean, one is loads, thanks.
Yeah, I've done that. I've proven to you. And like, another hilarious thing is that these two women were brought up in very, very different worlds. One extremely upper middle class America, kind of white picket fence. Other one raised basically in like a tenement. And they both have the exact same hair. They both have the exact same, like, complexion. Exact. There's no physical difference in them whatsoever. Like, if I was in kind of costume or makeup, I would have maybe scuffed up Dakota just a little bit.
Yeah.
Taken scissors to her hair. I don't know. Like, they're both...
She shouldn't be having layers. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's...
It was when she had that lovely brown hair, that lovely, like, auburn rich hair. Oh, beautiful. Like, she looks...
Luscious.
She looks stunning in the movie. Like, can't knock her. Can't knock her for that. And it was, like Lindsay, because in part of my research for this, which was loose, I'll tell you that much. But she did some amazing kind of modelling shoots around that time as well. Now, with the problematic Terry Richardson, which would have been a lot of like photos of her like licking guns and that kind of thing. But then Bryan Adams does some amazing photo shoots with her. And I mean, you know, he's good. If he ever quits the music, the old photography will definitely back him up there.
Brunette Lindsay, her power is too much. But that kind of brings me to my next question. In the unlikely event that they were ever to reboot this, even as a movie or like a TV series, who would you cast? Or is this just so intrinsically Lindsay?
Well, I remember when like Emma Stone first stepped on the scene, everybody was like, she's the new Lindsay Lohan, isn't she? And I feel like there is sort of a kind of, there is a kind of like a what if there, like what if things had actually kind of gone the way Lindsay had wanted them? Could she have had, could La La Land have been Lindsay Lola Land, you know? Lilo Land.
Lilo Land.
So yeah, they'll probably, yeah, I could have seen like Emma Stone, a younger Emma Stone doing this, which would have been probably like if she was to the like MTV reboot of I Know Who Killed Me, which, you know what, I could see that happening.
I feel like this would be the thing if Emma Stone did it, that they'd, you know, they'd roll out on the late night talk shows to kind of like embarrass her. To be like, remember you did this and it was mad. And Jimmy Fallon's like laughing and he's slapping his knee, you know?
Yeah. Or Max from Stranger Things. Like, the cast of Stranger Things, they're all like, they're the ones to watch who are going to do the really dodgy kind of bits of TV or film next to prove, yeah, no, I'm actually a grown up. I'm a serious actor. Like Billy Bobby Brown. That's her name? Millie Bobby? Whatever.
Millie Bobby. What? Or
Millie? I don't know. 11.
Millie. Millicent.
She is going to be doing some very, very dodgy movies. But I suppose the fact that Max has Taylor Swift in her camp proves that she's probably going to go kind of in a better direction. But if I had my way with the world, if there wasn't an I Know Who Killed Me reboot made straight for MTV, it would be Max from Stranger Things playing Lindsay Lohan.
That is incredible casting. That's all good.
Thank you very much.
How would a sequel look to you? Because I watched this and I was like, okay, the two of them are dead. And presumably, you know what I mean? Presumably that's what happens or whatever. But like, in an ideal world, they're both alive. Something's happened. What does that world look like for Aubrey and Dakota?
Okay, so the fact is that we basically, like an episode of Columbo, we know everything that has happened and we're just waiting for like, the, I don't know, the writer or the director to catch up. So this would obviously be called I Know Who Killed Me Too. So that would be Aubrey just basically retelling everything to Dakota and be like, yeah, that's what happened to me. And then her retelling everything. And then we'll then see it from the piano player's perspective. So that would be the absolute nonsense storyline where it's like, yeah, we all know that he did this to you, but yet we have to hear his side of the story so that we will figure out kind of why he did kill the two of them. And that would be I Know Who Killed Me Too.
I Know Who Killed Me Too, kill harder, etc., etc. Louise, it has been an absolute pleasure and an education. Thank you for allowing me to watch this, finally having an opportunity to watch this and sit down and immerse myself in it. Where can people find out more about you and DJing and everything like that? I'm not 100% sure when this is going to come out, so I'm not sure on dates, but if people want to find out more about you and hear you be an incredible DJ,
yeah,
where can they find that?
Trust that no matter when this comes out, that there will be a party. there will be parties. Yes,
there's always a party.
Yeah, I am largely kind of inactive now on Twitter, but I'm Lou Baracci there, and I'm also Lou Baracci on Instagram. But I only let some people follow me, so it's I like to play a nice game of chase.
So don't be adding her, you freaks.
Don't be adding me. I don't want you. But you can find me DJing as Lou Brew or the Pop Dungeon. And I like, it's not that hard to find me in that sense because I'm kind of everywhere. But yeah, so yeah, just come for me if you like the pop tunes or if you want to talk about Lindsay Lohan. I'm really happy for both of those things.
Incredible. I will add any dates that I know of when I do release this on social media and in the show notes for this episode. Louise Bruton, it has been an absolute pleasure to have you on Flop Culture.
Way.
And you can watch I Know Who Killed Me somewhere on the internet. Don't ask me where. A big thank you again to Louise. You can find her DJing at Westival in Westport on October 28th and 30th and in All My Friends on November 4th. So go check that out. We are at the beginning of the Lindsay Lohanessence. We got news of the Christmas movie that she's going to be in.
Falling for Christmas, coming to Netflix with Cordova Street. His name is not on the poster as it should be. This will be going to Netflix November 10th. Very excited. I think this is the one she's been filming in Ireland, right? Or she's been filming... That's the one about someone getting married, isn't it? Let me have a cursory Google here. Lindsay Lohan movie. Someone getting married. Apologies. That movie is Irish Wish. She plays Maddie in that and it's coming out in 2023. Cannot wait for that. That's also coming to Netflix. Very exciting. Very, very, very excited for that. Let the Lindsay Lohanissance continue for many years to come. Finally, let's find out who is top of the flops this week.
You're a flop. Flop.
Top of the flops this week can only be Kanye West. Have you ever witnessed a man squander talent and goodwill in such a spectacular way? He has obviously been on, I was going to use the word journey, which is an annoying word anyway, but in this context doesn't really seem right. He has been going through some things over the last few years, and I suppose more so in the last year and a half, where, you know, I think the fall from grace has been more public and more spectacular than ever. But I feel like we watched him harass Kim Kardashian online for the best part of, I don't know, a few weeks. And we all, most of us agreed, I would hope, that that was bad and shouldn't be done. And that's a bad thing to do and not great. He disappeared off the internet for a while, came back and obviously hosted the secret catwalk event at Paris Fashion Week this week for his Yeezy clothing line. And people went in good faith to cover it, which I'd have my own questions about, which I'll get to later on. But the catwalk event featured models wearing T-shirts with the slogan White Lives Matter. And then on the front, it had a photo of Pope John Paul II. He had Candace Owens there, right-wing commentator, conservative commentator, as a guest at the show. In a speech before the show, he talked about everyone here knows that I am the leader. You can't manage me. This is an unmanageable situation. He's talking about the robbery with Kim in Paris, loads of other things, Scooter Braun, his recent falling out with Gap. Naomi Campbell's in the show. The show features a children's choir. Northwest is singing in the choir. White Lives Matter has been defined as a hate statement because it was a statement that was reframed against the Black Lives Matter movement, which was a phrase used to protest against brutality. And I just don't know why. Teen Vogue have a really, really good piece that I'm going to link in the show notes that basically says it better than I ever could. And the headline is, "A plea to fashion media, stop covering Kanye West uncritically." But I think in general, media just actively need to start ignoring him because he's showed us consistently who he is every single time. This isn't just mental illness. This is narcissism on full show. In 2018, he was, you know, making quotes about slavery potentially being a choice, then rolled back on them, has since come back then with this. And then also in the wake of that, you had, you know, fashion editor Gabriella Carifa Johnson, who was in attendance at the show, shared some thoughts on the show on her Instagram stories that were quite, to be honest, tepid. Her interpretation of it was that she could kind of see where Kanye West was coming from with this. I can't, because I can't interpret fashion and I don't understand that. But anyway, I'll take her word for this. She has years of experience. But she was relatively tame in her criticisms, I will say. She shared posts like this on her Instagram stories and he started basically just immediately firing back at her, but in a way that wasn't even relevant to the conversation that initially began, like posting derisive comments about her, sharing pictures of her. In one picture, she's obviously wearing a certain outfit and she's wearing boots and he's saying that Anna Wintour would hate her boots. Then he's sharing a screenshot from someone else who's basically texting him being like, "I don't think you should insult that writer." It's like, I absolutely 100% believe in redemption. I believe people can make mistakes. I can acknowledge talent, and that's probably one of my slip-ups here and why I've enabled Kanye in my mind and I've turned a blind eye to a lot of things. But this is someone who has gotten away unchallenged over lots of things for many, many years. And this is the direct result of this. He's shown us who he is. Maybe we need to stop paying attention now altogether. Fashion media, popular media, everyone. Everyone just needs to stop enabling this because it's beyond not funny. It's beyond just any words. And I just actually think that's the only solution to maybe getting him to stop and taking a look in the mirror, because everything he does is performative. It's for the benefit of others, for the gaze of others. Enough's enough, in my humblest of opinions. Flop. Huge capital F flop. Kanye West, give it a rest. Give it a rest. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. We are on Instagram and TikTok under flapculture_pod. You can get in touch at helloflapculture@gmail.com. If you leave a 5-star review in your name or nickname on Apple Podcasts, I will recommend a bop or a flop to you. And you can also leave a 5-star review on Spotify. Today's bop is for KianR_94. Kian, Charlie Puth releases his third studio album, Charlie, tomorrow. And he's talked about how he wishes that this was his first album. Like, if he could do it all over again, this best represents him as an artist, blah, blah, blah. But that's not the recommendation I have for you today. No, no, I have tune one here. And the first is an episode of a podcast called Popcast from the New York Times. And the episode is titled Charlie Puth and Shawn Mendes Would Be Pop Kings. This podcast got me on to Charlie Puth, specifically his second album, Voice Notes. Go listen to it. It is so, so good. I will not stand for Charlie's self-erasure of voice notes. The best tracks are Boy, Slow Down, Empty Cups. Go forth and enjoy. It is just pop perfection. I'm hoping Charlie is even a fourth as good as those songs on that album, because if it is, we're probably in for one of the albums of the year. I'm very excited. Thank you so much. I will be back with you again next week. Today's podcast has been edited by Adam Shanahan. Artwork, as always, by the lovely Brian Lambert. And until then, I will see you next week. Goodbye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.